A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to a Thursday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and it's Thursday evening. So you know that we're talking college football during this offseason. 60 lists. Maybe a little bit less. I don't know. I lose track of how many days. It's not that long. It's the point until college football is back. And to talk all things college football as we do every Thursday night on this very podcast, Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. Every day is a Thursday around here in the college football world.
Mm. You push back a lot on my Maction preference this week. I'm going to push it next week. We're doing Maction, whether, like, I'll even let you pick which Maction game you want to revisit for our Throwback Thursday pod next week. But you were very anti Northern Illinois Ball State this week.
Yeah, you know, I'm just, if I'm going back, you know, in the Throwback Thursday, if you will, we're going back in the time machine. I want to go back and watch a game that I remember watching. You know, I probably wasn't even watching Northern Illinois Ball State. Were you watching that? Who was there? Any big time players? Was that the Jordan Lynch era?
That might have been Jordan Lynch. It's a good question. I'm not sure who was the tailback.
What year? What
I think
year
it
was
the year
it?
That they had the tailback who was good?
Oh, Garrett Wolf?
Yes.
Okay. And then the burner, Turner went to Northern Illinois as well, but that was much older than that game. What game? What year were you looking at? Like, it was like
2011.
Okay. Also, we are 58 days away from college football to be exact. So, get amped. I'm jacked about it.
Are you jacked?
As Dan Quinn would say.
We don't speak about Dan Quinn anymore. That's a Dallas Cowboys problem now.
He was a quality coach, all right.
Was he?
He was. I mean, they almost won a Super Bowl. Like, they should have won a Super Bowl. Did you see that interview with Shanahan talking about the Super Bowl? Oh, man, it was really good. You should check it out. Like, him and Sean McVay, he's just...
Oh, is
and
it
this
on
other
the,
guy.
The Flying Coach podcast?
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, and he's just kind of talking about going through those plays at the end of that Super Bowl. It was pretty interesting.
Hard pass. Don't want to revisit that. Don't want to do that to myself. I don't want to ruin a
that's Thursday. True. I'm not a huge Falcons fan. So that's
yeah,
I was
like
able
Detroit
to
Lions guy. But it's time for you to revisit because Stafford left.
That's true, but I don't want to be a Rams fan. Because the Rams, I don't know. It's LA, but I feel like at the end of the day once the season actually gets started, like, I'll be rooting for Stafford, so it's like I'll just end up being a Rams fan. It kind of sucked because I was kind of embracing the Lions thing, and they had DeAndre Swift too, so it was like kind of a little Georgia action up in Detroit. But no, I feel like quarterbacks are just measured on team success, and Stafford as the only Georgia quarterback, it's like I care more about what Georgia players do in the NFL than any particular NFL team, to be honest. And my fantasy squad, those are my allegiances. But I was still a little heartbroken for the Falcons. I was like, damn, why can't we have anything nice down here?
At least we have the Braves, that everything's going swimmingly at the moment.
Yeah, seriously, the Braves. We won't talk about the Braves right now. Are you a sneaker guy? You definitely seem like a fire sneaker guy.
Oh, I thought you said sneaker guy. And I was like, why do I seem like a sneaker guy to you?
No, you definitely seem like a fire sneaker, Brian Snicker.
No, I'm just I'm a firm believer that there's really no reason for managers anymore in Major League Baseball. There's no point. Like, just have the GM text the players. Like, all right, here's what I prefer. Like, they call in the shift. Like, just have the GM on the, like, in the dugout, just hanging out.
He's just up in the just up in the press box, just aligning the defense.
Right, like, that's what I would rather, him just have a mic up for all these guys or something like that. I just don't think there's a point. I don't understand. All they do is.
But what if something happens, man? They need to jump in there. That's why they got the uniform on. GM can't wear the uniform.
GMs would wear it better than most of the managers. I hate the manager uniform so much.
It's so weird,
ridiculous thing.
I'm sure it made sense in like 1920 when they would like jump in and play or something.
I'm sure
that happened back in the day.
Yeah, it's silly. I will say they're getting way too comfortable in the NBA. Like these little quarter zips and the jumpsuits they're wearing.
I like it. You don't like the quarter zips? You want your basketball coach in a suit?
Yeah, I want suit and tie.
Do
Act
you?
Like you've been there.
Oh no, man, I love it. I love the athleisure wear.
No, I like it too personally. I don't like my basketball coach wearing it.
But it's like fair enough. If it's like a football coach on the sideline though, it's you're rocking like some khakis and like
the Nike
athletic
in,
yeah, athletic
belt.
Shirt.
Yeah. Visor.
You know, like you don't like your basketball coaches being that casual, huh?
No, I don't. I think all managers should be wearing suits and ties. Like, they wear a sweater if it's cold, but you're not an athlete anymore. You're not an athlete. It's over. Like, you're
I don't mind it. I don't mind it, especially considering like some of these dudes just sweat their asses off in like the nice suit. It looks looks awful.
Bruce so it's Pearl like, at least goes through multiple suits. Sean Miller, that iconic image of his. Suit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like probably because you shouldn't be wearing a suit in this setting. You're like running around, like it's athletic. Like, I don't know. I don't mind it.
We disagree, Matt Green. How are the Decula, the locals? How are they getting ramped up for high school football season? Because there's probably like 50 or 40 something days before Decula kicks off their season. Are they in the Corky Kell this year? I know Parkview is.
You know, there's always a buzz about around Falcon Country, so they think these boys they might have what it takes this year.
How much merch have you gotten? Like, are you ready? Do you have enough merch for you?
I got no merch, no merch yet.
Can you at least take the lady to a game this fall? Like, you wouldn't let her go. She wants to get involved in the community. She wants to have some fun. You could bring the dogs, hang out on the side.
That's true. We might have to do that. I don't think you can bring dogs to a high school football game, though.
Can you not? I feel like I remember dogs. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe I'm just adding that in because it's been a crazy amount of time since you and I were in high school, Matt. Do you think about that? That it's now been like, I think it's 12 for me now. I think my high school reunion would have been 12 in May.
Yeah, it's high school is a long time ago. It doesn't feel that long ago, but
it doesn't.
It's a long time ago.
Couple quick notes before we get into our main event on tonight's show. Actually, what would you rather do? Would you rather do the over-unders, as people can see by the title of this episode, of which ones we think are the most appetizing per Vegas? Or would you rather start with our Throwback Thursday, which is the 2004 game between Auburn and LSU?
Let's save that. Let's save that for the main event, a little cherry on top. That'll be the dessert, the Auburn LSU.
Okay, but a couple quick notes. Your old friend Demetrius Robertson, for his 19th year of eligibility, has transferred to Auburn. Kind of a surprise here, right?
Not necessarily. I feel like he's a guy who seems like he should be at an SEC school. He just, you know, was probably sixth or seventh on Georgia's depth chart. But yeah, it's crazy to think about how he was a 5-star coming out. Same year as Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman's about to be in his third year in the NFL. This guy's still in college. So it's crazy.
If he can put it all together, I mean,
he's clearly got speed. He just doesn't seem like...
But that's good for Auburn. Get the Anthony Schwartz role. Fill it. He just left. Fill the Anthony Schwartz role.
Maybe. We'll I think see. Anthony Schwartz... I'm personally not high on Anthony Schwartz. I think Anthony Schwartz was way better than Demetrius Robertson.
Yeah, I think so. Schwartz was just a... I feel like he should have had a better college career. I feel like he should have done more in that Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, I feel like he's just a... It's one thing like to have the straight line speed, but you have to have the football speed too, you know. Not that he's not fast on the field, but he doesn't make those like real like explosive, like elusive plays. He seems like he just makes those plays where he just ran straight past somebody, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair.
I got into a beef, you remember? I got a beef, Twitter beef with Anthony Schwartz. a few months ago. Do you remember that?
No.
You know, I didn't... Oh, man. It was like some... One of these college football Instagram accounts, like, quote tweeted. Like, I said something because he... It was Georgia, the country, lost, like, some game in heartbreaking fashion or something. Mm-hmm. And he, like, tweeted, like, another L for Georgia, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I tweet at this guy, like, how many L's did you ever give Georgia? You know what I mean? Something like that, because I don't think he ever beat Georgia. But and then he said something about, like, you know, 1980 or, you know, some kind of reference to, like, Georgia winning a championship years ago. And then everyone acted like he clowned me. And I'm just like, how can you clown a team that you lose to? You know, I don't know. But... But
wait,
yeah,
was he not
I remember,
on the team? Was he not on the Murray? Was he not a freshman then? Was he not on the picks?
Aaron Murray?
Yeah, was he?
No,
not
Anthony
year?
Schwartz was on this year's team. So
no,
he
no,
was
no,
like,
I'm saying, was he not a freshman then? I guess not. I guess
no.
Not.
That was like 7 years ago.
That's seven now.
Good yeah, good. So he would have been what 2020, 2019, 18.
Yeah.
So he may have been on the 2017. I don't know. Was he a senior? Or
he
was
had
a junior?
To be there the carry on year. He had to be. That's what I'm thinking of. He was there
okay,
the,
so,
the carry on year.
So he went like 1-4 against Georgia then. If he was there for yes. for 4 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah. Back to the topic at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My Twitter beefs aside.
Well, 5-star defensive end choosing Bama over Clemson. This is a weird pick for me because I think when you think of Alabama, like if you're a 5-star offensive lineman, quarterback, receiver, running back, defensive back, linebacker, it all makes sense. I'm like, absolutely. But if you're an edge guy or you're a defensive line guy, there's absolutely no reason to choose Bama over Clemson. Clemson just, like, they've been doing this since Gaines Adams. Like, I don't know why you're, like, Cleveland Farrell is going, like, in the top five of the draft. What are you doing? Why,
I mean,
why
Alabama's
Alabama?
Been producing plenty of defensive linemen, outside linebackers in the first round, too, though. Like, Alabama's...
No, give me
just
one.
Been producing
Who?
Every...
Who lately?
I mean, yeah, Jonathan Allen was...
Inside.
Was one.
Yeah.
I mean, Quinnen Williams is more of a defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Shoot, off the
I'm
top of my head, Rashawn Evans, I think he was, like, a second-round pick, but...
I'm saying edge. They're producing inside guys. Like they'll always have the Terrence.
Rashawn Evans is an edge guy.
Yeah, but he's not elite. He's not an elite guy.
I mean, he's balling for the Titans, right? He's like a. But I'm just saying, like Alabama produces every position, so I'm like never gonna criticize it.
I don't know. I just feel like Clemson,
top player in Alabama for going to Alabama either.
No, I trust Brent Venables more. I'm just like, no, I'm gonna go get compile some sacks and just play this incredibly stacked defensive line in a place where they're just putting out top five defensive line guys over and over again. I don't know. I feel like that's a clear advantage Clemson has over Bama. I was surprised by it.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. They might have an advantage there, but it's like, I don't think anyone's ever making a bad career decision going to Alabama unless the Alabama's just like crazy loaded at their position.
What are the Crimson Tide up to?
What have you done for me lately?
Oh, man. I cannot.
They haven't won a game in months.
there are so many. Remember this guy, like the LSU Nick Saban staff. You have Dooley over there. Will Muschamp was losing his shit at one of the linebackers for LSU. Like that staff. Like
Jimbo, Kirby too.
Yeah, that is a wild staff. But we'll get to that. But yeah, that's all the news and notes. A lot of NIL stuff. UNC players not in on the 12-team playoff. More Arch Manning obsessions for somebody who is not going to commit for another year and a half. We're going to get into our preview soon, which I'm very, very excited about. Have you gotten your Phil Steele magazine yet, Matt?
Dude, I haven't. I'm disappointed.
Are you just not going to Publix?
I'm disappointed with my local Kroger. I was actually going to say that. I was actually on that aisle, and I was like, oh, nice. I totally been meaning to pick up a Phil Steele magazine, and it was not to be found. I was pretty disappointed. They had other ones. You know, I'm not going to shout out any brands, talk shit, but I was like, you know, if the College Football Bible isn't here, I'll hold out. I'll get it. I'll get it when I get it.
I will say, I get that and Athlon. Athlon, the folks at Athlon do a great job as well.
Okay. I thought about picking up Athlon, but I was
Athlon's good. They're good. They both do solid work. And they got a good podcast, so listen to the Athlon Sports Podcast if you don't already. Well, let's get into what our main event of this off-season Thursday night edition of this program is, Matt. The over-unders we're using... BSIN, we know it. It's that gambling site that you see on Twitter all the time. And they have the over-unders for all the teams across college football. I wanted to do kind of like a back and forth of which wins over and under seem the most appetizing to you, where you're like, I would bet the over, or they're way too low on this one. But I leave the floor to you. Where do you want to start?
So there's a few of these that I was looking at. Some of these are some really tough numbers. So you got Alabama and Clemson up at 11.5. The Clemson, you know, that really just comes down to if you think they're going to beat Georgia or not, I guess, right? It's either an undefeated season or it's a one-loss season. I tend to go under on Clemson. I'm not super confident on it. But with Alabama, I just feel like this doesn't feel like an undefeated Alabama season, right? It feels like they could still win the national championship, but it seems like they're going to kind of, this is going to be kind of more of a growing pains kind of team. Like I don't see them just dominating everybody like they do when they have some of the senior leadership they've had in the last.
They can only go down. They had the best offense maybe in college football history last year.
Like it's absurd. Like replacing a transcendent starting quarterback and then having the best offense ever. And then replacing the starting quarterback again, it's just, obviously it's Alabama. Like they're a powerhouse and they're just a well-oiled machine, but it just doesn't seem like a year that they're going to go undefeated. Like I can't pick a loss necessarily on their schedule. Like I wouldn't say A&M's going to beat them. I wouldn't say Florida's going to beat them. I wouldn't say Miami or something's going to beat them, LSU. But it just doesn't feel like a year where they go undefeated. You know what I mean? It feels like they might lose a game they shouldn't early and then probably dominate the second half of the year, something like that. So Alabama and Clemson, I'm going under on both of them.
Oh, Clemson, I'm going over. I would almost lock in Clemson. I think the ACC is down this year. I think people are buying way too much into the UNC stuff. I think Florida State's on the rise. I think people, I don't know.
But at 11.5, at 11
Notre
and a half,
not on the schedule anymore either.
At 11.5, the ACC doesn't even matter though, right? It's really undefeated or bust. So you think they're definitely beating Georgia?
I would say they're the favorites over Georgia, wouldn't you? Even as a Georgia fan, would you say that like it should be considered that it not an upset, but it would be a surprise if Georgia beat Clemson out of the gate?
I mean, it might surprise more like mainstream sports fans, but just because what Clemson has been in recent years, but I think Georgia should be the favored team, to be honest. Like, I think Georgia just got more proven. Like, I mean, it's really, I guess, the quarterback more than anything else with Clemson. Obviously, DJ looked great in the couple games. Yeah, in the couple games he played last year. But I don't know. I think I'm just very confident in what Georgia's going to be defensively next year. And with JT Daniels, I feel like the sky's the limit. But That's why I felt like Georgia at 10.5. Like, I would bet my freaking house on Georgia being over 10.5. Like, I just don't see any. Yeah. I don't see any way that Georgia has a 10-2 regular season. Like, maybe they lose to Clemson and run the table, or they just.
I was gonna say it's possible if you lose Clemson and Florida.
Or it's definitely possible.
Or Florida, Auburn.
But I feel like Florida is like the only one. Like Auburn, yeah, maybe, but they're in a first-year head coach. Like Florida seems like the... There only seems like two games on Georgia's schedule they could even possibly, theoretically lose, you know? So I would almost bet everything that Georgia is going to be over 10.5. And the other one like that I had was just going way down at LSU at 8.5. Mm.
Like, I'm staying away from LSU.
I feel like I would hammer LSU at 8.5. Like, obviously, like, there's
you over or under?
Over.
Oh, like,
I'm saying like 8.5. Like, a 9-3 season for LSU isn't a good season. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think he's getting fired if you win less than 8 games.
Well, that's probably true, and he could get fired at 9 wins for all we know with all the other shit that's going on with LSU. But like. At home, like this year, it's Auburn, Florida, and A&M are all at home. Like, Ole Miss is obviously like a wild card in the West this year, and Alabama are both on the road. But like, Auburn hasn't beaten them in LSU since like the 90s or something. So I feel like LSU, I think at the bare minimum, I mean, I guess not the bare minimum, I could see them going 8-4, I guess. But I think I don't know. I'm going back and forth here, but. I just don't see him going any worse than 9-3. Mm. Like, A&M, I'm not sold on A&M, personally. Like, I just don't know. Like, I think A&M's going to be a good team. That was a really tough one for me. What did you have? A&M at 9.5. I almost couldn't even pick that.
Well, if you're picking over on A&M 9.5, you're thinking they're going to win the West.
That's why I don't think they're going to win the West.
I would take the under on A&M. I'm terrified of the West. The West is just, that's why I'm so much safer on Georgia than I am on any team in the West. It's just that, like, I think the West doesn't even have a bad team in it. Like, they're all the worst average. Like, there is, like, you can't take Arkansas.
Yeah, I would say I'm sleeping on Mississippi State way more than you are. I feel you're higher.
Be good. Like, Mike Leach is going to be good. Like, they are going bowling this year. Like, that is going to be a good team. Will Rogers is legit.
So you think A&M, so you would take the under on A&M, 9.5?
I would take the under on A&M.
Okay, so what would you do on LSU, 8.5?
Under. I think there's going to be a lot of 7-5, 6-6 in the West.
Okay. So I didn't even see, I don't know if they even had Auburn, and did you see any of those other... One thing I thought was interesting
looking
at these...
You don't have
the
under on UCF. Year one of Malzahn transitioning from the Heupel offense to Malzahn. No. Bang, like, Gabriel, sell all your Gabriel stock. Like, that dude playing in Heupel's Baylor raid to Gus Malzahn and seeing what Gus Malzahn does with these older quarterbacks? No. No, no, no. I will sell some UCF stock. Who I will buy stock on,
that's
though,
a valid
in
point.
That 9-10 range.
But
Wisconsin, 9.5, pound the over. Wisconsin's going to be good. And they're in the weaker division. They're going to avoid some big-time matchups like, I think, Wisconsin. Like, there's not many stable programs like Wisconsin, and Wisconsin feels extremely 10-2 to me.
Yeah, I can get with that. I want to go back to your UCF. I think you're spot on there, just looking at their schedule. Like, Boise State and Louisville out of conference, and that's not even including the AAC, where they could lose to Cincinnati.
I would say
Memphis, SMU. Yeah, like, I would assume you'd lose to Cincinnati. So, yeah, that looks like at least three losses on that schedule.
Yeah, I would go nowhere near that. Arizona State, I would go nowhere near 9. I would pound the under with all that.
That's
stuff.
What I was about to ask you. You're our Pac-12 expert here. We got all four of those teams in the Pac-12 at 9. The Arizona State, USC, Oregon, and Washington.
Well, and Washington, I feel like, you can go ahead and lock it in.
That's just a blue blood program right there.
I would just be scared of Oregon with their quarterback situation. Tyler Shuck left for Texas Tech. Anthony Brown or Thompson's commander center? That's just some real question marks there. Recruiting well, so it's not like they're gonna be bad or anything. I don't know. I think I would go new. I would probably say of the four, that I'm most confident in, I would, in all honesty, say USC going over 9.
I was thinking USC as well, and maybe Oregon, but you know I'm always skeptical of the Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
But one what I thought was interesting is that Notre Dame at 9. I just feel like you see Notre Dame at 9, and it's like, oh, Notre Dame's going to win. I was thinking the same, or that's what I was starting to say. You see Notre Dame at 9, I was like, oh, they're going to win more than 9 games. But this is a low-key, like, super tough schedule. Like, I don't know how good FSU is going to be this year, but you got Wisconsin. That's, like, in Green Bay or something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati, USC, North Carolina, like,
it's a lot of losses.
There could be 3 or 4 losses on that schedule. I would also take the under when it comes to Notre Dame.
I think this is going to be a drop back year for Notre Dame. I think this is a rebuilding year.
Yeah, I would agree. But what about your Iowa State Cyclones at 9.5?
Nowhere near it. No, thank you. Terrifying. Oh. Terrifying.
Okay, see, I thought you were definitely going to be over that.
I want them to do it naturally. I don't want to be the one betting on Iowa State. I don't want to go anywhere near it. I don't want to ruin the fun there.
Yeah, I'm taking the under. I'll be honest. Like, just looking at their schedule, everything they got coming back, like Oklahoma they have in Norman, but the Big 12 is just so unpredictable. Like, I think they have Iowa, Oklahoma State, and Texas all at home, but I don't know. I feel like Iowa State just seems like a 9-3 team. Like, it seems like their good years are a 9-3. So I don't know. I'm just not sold on them.
Who is the degenerate that's gambling, taking the over on Army for 8 wins?
Oh man, that's probably a good bet.
The money is on them winning more than 8 games. Who's the absolute college football sicko that's betting on Army's season this fall?
That's a good question. I was telling Tori before he came on the show, I was like, babe, if we can find Georgia at 10.5, so we should bet our house on that. I'm telling you, there, it's a lock. It's a lock.
You know what you should do? You should
famous last words.
In. You should put some serious, not like mortgage worthy stuff, but you should put some hefty sum in there and say like, hey, I'm gonna do this, and if I hit it, we're going on vacation wherever you want to go.
I did put a little something on Georgia to win the national championship when I was out in Vegas.
Did you?
Yeah.
How much?
Just a little something, something. I just put like $50 on it.
So if you win, what is it? Like, what are the odds right now for them?
I got it at 10-1, so it'd be like $500.
Ooh, that's not bad.
That'd be real solid. Now I'm looking back, I was like, I should have put like $200 on it or something, just to have a big time payout. But yeah, you know, you lose that money if you don't win. So
I don't hate that. I don't hate
gambling.
That. Marshall,
10-1. I was like, that's a pretty solid. Those are good odds.
I like those. I like those odds for Georgia. If there's a not Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma favorite, I think that's, there's some really good value there. Marshall at 7.5, Charles Huff in there, the Alabama running backs coach, he's recruiting pretty well. I think Marshall like fell apart down the stretch weirdly. They were undefeated for the majority of the season, if you recall. Like we were very pro Marshall on this podcast. I was watching.
We were a pro Marshall podcast.
So I'm gonna pound the over there. Give me the over on Marshall 7.5.
I like it.
Where it gets feisty though, I love the middle pack. That means like where Vegas has no idea what to do with this. It's like Auburn at 7. They have no idea what to do with Auburn.
Yeah, seriously, like I think 7-5, it seems like a very predictable very likely outcome for Auburn this year, but
if see
going
to 8-4
or like 9-3.
Yeah, like it's easy to see a 10-2, 9-3 season for them if Bo Nix figures it out with Harsin.
Also, Kentucky at
pound the 7? I would say over. I think they're going to get
I seven. Think so. In a really weak East, like they might still be, you know, second to Georgia and Florida, or third to Georgia and Florida, but they do have Auburn on the road. Or wait, that was, I'm looking at last year's schedule. My bad. But in the West, they have LSU and who's it? Mississippi State they play every year. So yeah, they do have LSU from the West, but I mean, that's what, 3 or 4 losses we named? Like, that's still over 7 wins. So I think I like Kentucky over 7.
Can I give you my lock? If I had to bet my mortgage, like your Georgia thing, if I had 10.5, do you know what mine is? What would you guess? If they're in the 7-win range right
now. Is it going to be the Missouri Tigers?
It's not.
Okay.
You can have your Connor Bazelak stock, excuse me. And also, you know what? They're going to be number one for taking the Collins Hill kid from Tennessee.
Oh, Sam, yeah, that's
right. What's his name? Sam Horn?
Horn, yeah.
Didn't he wear number 21 or something in high school?
Yeah, he did. That annoyed me. I'll be honest, not to be a get-off-my-lawn kind of guy, I don't think I like the NFL numbers, man. Like, the single digits and stuff. Like,
you'll get used to it.
I don't know. It was something cool about the college game that you could do that, but I don't know.
What does that even mean? You like it in college, but you're not going to like it in the NFL? Why do you care?
It's like college and high school. It's like, you can do whatever you want. But the pros, it's like professional. Like, you rock the number you gotta wear. Like, I don't know. There were definitely underutilized numbers. Like, only the kickers and, like, quarterbacks were in single digits. Like, I don't know. I do understand it. Especially like Chicago Bears having like 8 numbers retired and stuff, but I don't know.
Get me started on the get off my lawn about retired numbers. That will never not drive me up the wall. I could rant about that and the silliness of that and statues for sports figures, especially when they're still alive. I could spend hours in this podcast.
So you're being anti retiring numbers.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous. Just let them wear it and then like represent them. Be like, hey, this was my idol growing up. I would like love to represent what they represented back in the day. I'm gonna rock the number and do my best to live up to it, not put it in the rafters. And like somebody who can't use that number 30 years after, like, what? It's a number.
You're a great player for us. No one will ever wear this number again.
Yeah, it's silly. I think it's extremely silly and not fair to the younger guys. It's like, I wasn't even born when he was good. Why can't I wear this number that I wore in high school and college? Makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm a big fan of how soccer does the numbers, like almost like positions, you know, like traditionally that's how they do it. You know, the number 9 is the striker and everything. And the number 10 is like the attacking midfielder, kind of captain of the team or whatever.
Mm.
Like, I feel like I love that, how it's like a role, like the defenders are usually like number 2 through 5. The goalie's number 1. Like, I like that. There's some order to it.
I don't disagree.
But I feel like I got you off on a tangent.
Well, you didn't guess what my number was. Like, oh yeah, yes. Team was for you.
Oh, one of these teams in the set, Ole Miss.
No, they're 7. Okay, no, I think I would take the over on Ole Miss right now, but. I'm not confident about it. Anyway, no, not them.
Okay, well, who's your team?
UCLA at 7. They're bringing back their entire offensive line, bringing back guys all over the place. Remember how they were the youngest team in college football 2 years ago when Chip Kelly took over? Like, they just had freshmen everywhere, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson had only played 1 year of high school football before he became a quarterback at a Power 5 school and was thrown into everything, and he does his own thing. He does his own stuff. He runs around. He's fun to watch. He's one of the most fun college quarterbacks to watch. I enjoy UCLA all the time, and as a Pac-12 After Dark stan, he's an absolute delight. Should have beat USC. They lost like 4 games by like less than 10 points or something like that last year. Like, their losses were all extremely close, especially that USC game, which I would highly encourage you to check back out. It was really good. But Chip Kelly's got something brewing there, and I think I would. The Pac-12 is open for them. The Pac-12 South is absolutely open for them to take advantage. So I would lock it in. Right now, we are on July 8th, 2021. For the record, you can revisit December, Matt, but UCLA will win over 7 games. Like, absolute, no question, they're winning over 7 games.
Lock it in. What about Penn State at 9? I'm going over on Penn State. They go at Wisconsin and at Ohio State this year, but I think Auburn, Michigan, Indiana, all those, like, this is probably their 3 toughest home games. I think those are all winnable games. As you know, they did beat Indiana last year, even though the scoreboard didn't say it. But I think Auburn in Happy Valley, I feel like that's going to be a win for Penn State. And I think a 10-2 season is very possible
for Penn State.
For Penn State. What did I say?
Yeah, I think it just depends on how I feel about Clifford. I think you're right that they're a prime bounce back candidate. Like, it would not be surprised if it was Penn State or Wisconsin that locked in that 10 number, but I believe in Wisconsin, I think, a little bit more than I do Penn State. But I'm okay with either. On the lower end, we go down the 6 wins, 6.5. Like, this is like Tennessee at six. I would go nowhere near it because 6-6 sounds right to me for them. Arkansas.
Is that what Tennessee fans are expecting?
Yeah,
like six and six.
Just go.
Or just year one just doesn't even matter. Whatever the win loss record, year one. You're just getting to year two.
The ones that are interesting, like the below 500 teams, that I think is the most appetizing. Mississippi State at 5.5. Just go ahead and lock that one in. They're winning more than five games, I think. Colorado at 4.5 is wild to me, but maybe they're going to be a lot worse than I'm expecting there. What about your rival, the arch nemesis down there in Atlanta? 4.5 for Georgia Tech.
I was looking at that. Georgia Tech at 4.5 and Florida State at 5.5 seems weird to me. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like Georgia Tech should be as good as Florida State, right? Like, to have them almost, I mean, maybe I'm a little higher than, maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself on Florida State. Maybe they're still not that good this year, but I feel like I tend to like Florida State going over the 5.5. And then Georgia Tech, they got to go over 4.5, right? Like 5-7 in year three, like that's got to be the bare minimum. I would assume they're trying to make a bowl game this year, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a weird one. I don't pretend to have a good read on them right now. But I could see either way. I think they're good. They have more talent. Their schedule is ridiculous. I think don't they have the hardest schedule in football this year?
Well, they have Clemson and Georgia, so that's not a good start. That's not a good start right there. And then you got North Carolina.
I think they have Notre Dame too, right?
And Miami. Oh yeah, they do go at Notre Dame the week before Georgia. They go at Notre Dame. So that's definitely a tough schedule right there.
Can I lock in another one?
And then
for
they
you?
Got your Northern Illinois Huskies there to open up the season.
That's not a guaranteed win.
Oh, and they also got the Owls of Kennesaw State, a little in-state rivalry week in the second week of the season.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, playing Kennesaw State.
Is Georgia playing Georgia State or Georgia Southern?
Not this year, I don't believe.
I got one for you. Kansas. They're looking at one per Vegas. I might put $1,000 on Kansas winning more than one game.
They gotta win two games.
Lance Leopold is going to win two games. Okay, so here's the schedule. South Dakota at home. There's your one. You broke even there. There's the one. Are you telling me
they have to win one game?
They can't go to Duke, beat Duke. Duke's awful. Like,
I mean, Duke, that's probably a team that'll beat them though, right?
Who, Duke or Kansas?
I'm saying Duke.
No,
right?
Duke stinks. Like,
what
Duke
can Lance Leopold do in one year?
One of the worst program. Like, they are in horrible shambles. Like, it is bad in Duke country right now. That roster stinks.
We are talking about Kansas, though.
Kansas. Are you telling me? You telling me they can't take down the Texas Tech Red Raiders at home?
I wouldn't bet on it, but
Red Raiders
knows?
Have not had a winning record in, like, 6 years. Then you have...
But I bet you they're beating Kansas.
But you're telling me Kansas, after winning the opener at home against South Dakota, they can't beat Baylor at home?
Hey, I'm not...
They can't beat Kansas State at home?
Did you see the Pro Football Focus came out with their, like, top 20 coaches?
Mm-hmm.
I know they're a real controversial figure in these parts when it comes to college football. But they had Lance Leopold, I think, at, like, 8 or 9.
Yeah, boy.
And I was shocked by that. They didn't have Ryan Day in the top 20. Which,
I just, Ryan Day is too early. Like, it's,
I think
just,
that's probably all it is.
It's too early, man. He inherited, like, he had the best. In, like, has there ever been a coach that's inherited a better situation than Ryan Day inherited Ohio State?
I wouldn't think so.
And it's not his fault. Like, he still deserves credit for keeping it moving and not letting it go off the rails. But, like, there is no excuse for him not to be in the playoff every year. Like, they just gave it to him on a silver platter. Like, it's just... That is what it is. Another SEC one. Who would you take more? Vanderbilt at 3 or South Carolina at 3.5?
You got to go
so
South
mad.
Carolina, right? Obviously, I don't I got to pull up their schedule.
I'll pull up Vanderbilt.
Obviously, Clemson is a loss on there, and you got Georgia too. But, I mean, who do they have from the West this year? So, from the West, they have Texas A&M. And Auburn. So that's a tough draw right there at Texas A&M as well. So honestly, I don't think, I'm not sure they've beaten Texas A&M since they joined the SEC, since that became their like locked rival. I don't think they've beaten them one time. So I'm not liking South Carolina's chances of going to a bowl game. But 3.5 wins, I feel like they're going to beat Eastern Illinois, right? They'll beat Troy. Hopefully Vanderbilt. That's 3 wins right there. And then you got East Carolina. Although that's, is that a guaranteed win?
There's an easy path for Clark Lee and his gang of 3-stars that he's recruiting. He's killing in the 3-star market right now. I don't know if you've kept up with Vanderbilt recruiting lately, but Barton Simmons. Putting in work, getting those
Barton
3-2
Simmons. The commish.
Exactly. East Tennessee State at home to open. On the road at Colorado State and Steve Adazio. Stanford at home. I love that they're playing Stanford. That should be a thing. The smart schools in their conferences. They should play each other all the time. Connecticut at home, who stinks. They go to South Carolina. That might define if they get 4 wins. And then Tennessee at the end of the year. I don't know. I have no idea. That game is just, I don't know. I don't know where Tennessee is going to be at that point. I think it's possible. I think there's a pretty doable path for Vanderbilt to go to 4-8 this fall.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm a big Jack Seals guy too.
What about Florida? You got Florida at 9.
And by Jack Seals, I mean Ken Seals.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you say?
What about Florida at 9?
No, thanks. No idea.
I'm thinking Florida goes over. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put money on it, but...
Florida, I have no idea. Like, are we all in on Emory Jones?
I mean, I'm not all in on Emory Jones, but I don't know. It's just, like, looking at their schedule, like, they're going to benefit from the East being down, yeah. And they play no one at a conference, like, other than Florida State. Like,
they get Bama,
obviously,
though.
They do have, but they have Bama and then Georgia. So it's like, that's, you would assume 2 losses. I mean,
at LSU is going to be brutal.
And LSU. So that's what it comes down to. So they'll most likely be a push. I think I see a 9-3 season coming from Florida, but I wouldn't guarantee a loss to LSU. Like,
No.
We just have no idea what to expect from LSU or Florida really this year. Yeah, like you said, it's. That's definitely a toss-up.
I think Kentucky will be spicy.
Yeah, and I mean, just to get LSU and Alabama from the West in one season, that's a tough draw for sure.
Well, before we do 2004 rather, Auburn LSU. Any other overunders you wanted to talk about before we move on?
The last one I got was Cincinnati. What were they at 10? Indiana and Notre Dame.
Indiana
are like the two big tests I think on their schedule, and obviously the AAC is a tough conference, so they could slip up there. But I tend to think they're going 11-1 or better.
Cincinnati could go undefeated and wouldn't surprise me.
They definitely could. But let's do it.
2004, Randy Cross on the call. This is pre. Gary Danielson, pre-Vern Lundquist on CBS.
So I'm glad you said that, because I did some research, and that is not actually the case. This was the B team.
Oh.
Yeah, it was 3:30 CBS kickoff. I'm thinking, where the hell is Vern Lundquist? I think it was Todd Blackledge at this time with Vern Lundquist before Gary Danielson.
Yeah.
But what was the guy's name? Craig Bowler Jack? I was like, who the hell is this guy? No disrespect to Craig Bowler Jack, friend of the pod. But I was wondering, like, what? I remember watching this game, like 3:30 CBS, but Tennessee, Florida was that night. I don't know if you remember. That was like a great one, too. It was the game
one at Tennessee? Was that Grossman?
I think it was at Tennessee. It was just after Grossman, 04. I'm not sure who the quarterback was. Oh, that would have been Chris Leak. Leak is like a sophomore, I think. And it was the game where Dallas Baker, some receiver for Florida, got that like personal foul penalty he like hit the dude in the face or something. It got like a personal foul penalty, and it like set up some huge like turning point like late in the game. I don't know if it was like a fourth down or something. Like, I remember that being like a huge thing, like punching a dude in the face. And then Tennessee hit like either it was like a walk-off field goal with no time left, or like 5 seconds left or something. Will Hoyt, was that the kicker for Tennessee?
Number 25. I think that was his name. Jason Will Hoyt, I think.
I think, I can't remember the first name, but yeah, I think it was like, I think he like missed a big kick or something in that game too, like late. And it was like, he was kind of the GOAT for a second, and then he hit the game winner. But yeah, so Vern Lundquist and Todd Blackledge were on that telecast. So I was, it's funny you said that, because that was the first thing I thought when I started watching the game.
Interesting. Your big takeaways here, because I heard defending co-national champions also when this game started.
And I was malarkey! Like, I was so hostile when I heard that. The co-national champion. We went to the BCS in 1998. That meant nothing else mattered but the BCS. I'm forever salty about this USC claiming the national championship. Like,
it just
going
weird too.
going for the three-peat in the Rose Bowl. It's like they won one championship, okay? They weren't going for a three-peat. But yeah, the big takeaways, I feel like, for one, just nostalgic. I miss these player intros. Mm. Like putting up the starting lineup on the screen, and you got like the class, the juniors and everything. They don't do that anymore. They just put like a list on there. They don't have a picture for everybody. I don't know. I like the old starting lineup format they had going. But this is just a throwback in every way, man. Like 10-9, like, and it didn't feel like a boring game either. Like this felt like an action-packed game, and it was like 10-9. And just looking at LSU's coaching staff, like we already kind of alluded to earlier, with Kirby, Jimbo Fisher, Muschamp, Derek Dooley, like it was loaded.
What did Randy Cross he called it not the West Coast. He was really upset that they were calling Al Borges' offense at Auburn the West Coast. He's like, it's not the West Coast. What did he call
it? Oh, shoot. What was he calling it?
Oh, Gulf Coast office.
Gulf Coast. Yes, that is what he called it.
And I was like, he's really proud of this. I will say, it was just, it's such a different game now, man. I mean, this was 17 years ago, but like, it was unreal how different it was, because you had the first quarter, which was basically each team had their own drive. Like, the LSU went all the way down the field, Auburn went all that down the field, they settled for a field goal, but like, both teams had like 15 plays in their opening drive, and then it just never really happened after that. But like, it was unreal to just see, like, Ronnie Brown outside, Ronnie Brown up the middle, Ronnie Brown outside again, Ronnie Brown off the left tackle, Ronnie Brown up the middle, legal block.
That's
all right,
that's
here comes
one
Cadillac.
Thing.
Cadillac.
That's
on
one thing I
throw.
Noticed. It felt like kind of watching Georgia with Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel. Like, like there was times where Ronnie Brown just looked way better than Cadillac Williams, but Cadillac just seemed to get the ball more. Like, I don't know. It was kind of interesting. It seemed like Ronnie Brown was doing more every time he touched it. I think he averaged like 7.5 yards a carry in this game. And Cadillac got the ball, hit 18 carries compared to just 9 for Ronnie Brown. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't remember Jamarcus Russell just kind of taking over. And he was basically the quarterback from third quarter on in this game.
He's
benching the senior. Yeah. And they just
Randall was so much better. He was doing stuff with his legs. He was way more accurate. Russell, dude, he had some balls where I was like, what is he even aiming at? He was like, he had Joe Milton syndrome, or like, I don't know how Saban put up with this in 2004. Like, he was missing guys. It wasn't even close. Like, he was throwing these.
I feel like that was exactly what like all LSU quarterback play looked like from like 2004 to like 2017, basically.
I mean, like, Jordan Jefferson didn't have the arm talent. Like, Russell literally could put the ball, like, if he had, like, I think it was more of like a putting in the work. We saw that in the NFL with the Raiders, but like, if that dude just put in the work, like, he had the arm talent just to like throw the ball wherever he wanted. He had that bomb to Chris Davis as his first throw in the first half down the right side, but like, outside of that, he was missing all over the place. And like,
well, and he was also a true freshman here too. So,
but it was like watching
the third game of the season.
Bo Nix just not, it just wasn't accurate. I think coming in, I think I saw his completion percentage was like 43% coming in. That's preposterous. I don't think you can even, I don't think a team will play you like that anymore. Like, you cannot, like, most coaches are looking at 65-70%, like, minimum.
Yeah, it was crazy to see another Saban team lose because of kicking troubles. This is just like the only reason he's lost any games over the last like 15 years. It's just like a kicker missing a chip shot, or in this game missing an extra point. But also, what do you even know what the call was there at the end of the game when Auburn missed the extra point? They tied the game like a minute left, and then they had the extra point to go ahead, and they missed the extra point, and then they called like a personal foul or something at LSU, and then they re-kicked it. And I thought he missed it again on the re-kick, but it went in. But do you even know what they called?
I don't remember now.
Like, it looked like they were calling, like, I don't know if you remember that Monday night game. Was it Tampa Bay and like the Colts or something? And yes, they called like leaping
Dungy.
That was what they called, right? They called leaping, I think.
I think that's right.
And it's like, I think it just meant like you kind of jump, propel off somebody. But I think that may have been what they called, but it was a crazy, crazy ending there. Like, have a game winning touchdown and the kicker missed the extra point. That would have just been one of the most wild games ever. Especially both teams score one touchdown and both kickers miss the extra point. Like, that'd have been crazy. But I thought it was a terrible call. I don't know if you remember the fourth and goal. A minute left in the third. Auburn down 9-3. And they go for it on fourth and goal from the two. Like, you're in a 9-3 game. Take the points. Make it 9-6. Like, let's get out of here. Like, every yard in this game, it felt like a battle. Like, this felt like just like the classic like SEC slugfest. Like, this is one of those first, honestly, this is like one of the first like memorable games, I feel like, of my lifetime. Like, I was like, well, I was like 14 years old. Like, this was like Florida Tennessee and is like the East SEC East version of Auburn LSU to me. Like, it was always like one of those early games in the season. It's like the third week. It was like the first like great SEC game of the year. And it's just like a battle. Like, Auburn LSU, I feel like, always, it's just a grimy game.
That's true. It was also just like, this kind of game just can't exist anymore. Like, it can't exist. Like, it's impossible to have an SEC game like this now.
It might be. But you're going to see, like, just because people are throwing the ball, it doesn't mean everyone's going to be throwing the ball well, you know? It's like these teams, it's like everyone's shooting threes in the NBA. It's like, not everyone should be shooting threes. Like, some teams can shoot
threes.
Well,
I mean, the
just because,
right now. I mean, Devin Booker and Chris Paul are the best mid-range shooters in basketball. They're just killing the Bucks in the mid-range.
For sure. And it's like, if you just got to play your game, you know? If you got elite bigs, then you can play on the inside. If you can't shoot threes, you don't have to shoot threes just because everybody's shooting threes, you know? So I think you're going to see, we're still going to have some of these ugly 10-9 type games, even if teams are throwing the ball 30 or 40 times, probably just because, who knows, they're just bad at it. Some teams are going to be bad at it.
Well, it's also just like, so now everything's about pace and playing, like getting as many possessions as possible. This game was all about, in this era, it was all about hoarding the ball. All about possession, all about dragging it out, like just wearing LSU down, and LSU trying to wear down Auburn, because you're throwing out Vincent, you're throwing out Adai, you're throwing out Broussard, and then on Auburn side, you're throwing out Ronnie, you're throwing out Cadillac, you're throwing out even Trey Smith a little bit. Like, they, I will say though, there was one guy I wrote down and I was like, this poor guy. Mix, dude, if he was huge, and in the slot,
he
had some
was
good
huge.
Wrong era for him. If he came out now, if he was at Auburn or at Florida or Georgia in 2021, that dude would be utilized in a completely different way. I feel bad for that guy. I was watching him like, this poor guy. Wrong era.
Yeah, that's kind of true. He's a big body. I think they called him a receiver, right? But he kind of looked more like a tight end. Yeah, he definitely was built probably similar to Kyle Pitts, but I feel like this was the start, I feel like, of LSU just having like three or four future running backs on just every roster, like Ali Broussard, Joseph Addai, Justin Vincent. Like, they were just four deep for just like a decade straight. But yeah, neither team had 200 yards passing in this game. Neither team had 30 passing attempts, but they also like didn't even run the ball that well. It was a wild game. A few turnovers, a couple like just momentum shifting plays. It was a good one.
I would agree. Any final thoughts on LSU Auburn 2004? Was Jason Campbell about what you remember?
Not really, just because I feel like this was still early in the season. I feel like that Auburn team hadn't hit their stride. I think he played for four different offensive coordinators, though, right? I think that was always something they always said about him.
Huh.
And so this was like the first year that he had a good one, or maybe it was three offensive coordinators, and this was the first year where like a second. There was some sort of storyline, I remember that, with his OC. And I felt like early in the year, like this was just like a, you know, just a gutted out game. But after this, I feel like Auburn started smoking people. Like they played Tennessee twice, right? I think they just blew them out in the regular season. And then I'm not sure if the SEC championship was closer, but like they just destroyed Georgia this year. Like that would be my final thoughts, is if I was an Auburn fan, like as a Georgia fan, I still like think about 2007. I'm just like, man, things happen differently and Georgia gets in the SEC championship. Like Georgia's the best team in the country that year. Like I wholeheartedly believe that. Like 2004 Auburn, like I know USC was tight that year.
You really hate that USC era.
Well, it's just we saw what the best teams in the SEC did, right? For like a decade straight. Like from 2006 to 2012, like if you're the best team in the SEC, you were the best team in the country. And so like that Auburn team, like there's some years, like even 2005 Georgia, like when like USC and Texas were in the national championship, like I'm not going to argue that 2005 Georgia with Shockley was better than that team, but we don't know, you know. Every other SEC team beat the best teams that came to them, you know. So it's unfortunate that we got like the worst national championship game of all time, like with Oklahoma USC that year.
All time. Can I present to you LSU Bama?
LSU. See, but at least it was a competitive game.
That
like,
game was awful.
What was the score? Like 56-19 or something like that?
No, I'm
like,
talking about the Jordan Jefferson LSU Bama.
No, I know. I'm talking about USC Oklahoma. I think it was like 21-0, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like close.
Midfield. I love a national championship game where the other team doesn't cross midfield.
Yeah, that was domination. That was terrible, because everyone knew, and we didn't want a rematch, but everyone knew Alabama was better than LSU, right? I felt like if Oklahoma State hadn't tripped up, they would have gotten in. But clearly Alabama was the best team since they shut out LSU in the national championship. But I would just still be salty if I was an Auburn fan. That 2004, like that team was dominant.
That's fair. All right, Matt. What should we hit next week? Are we now? We're getting really, really close to doing our preview series, I think, with our conference previews. We're pretty close so that we can hit everybody. Do you want
to
start
that
next
week? Yeah, I'll have to stack this up, see how many days we need to do.
We
got to
make sure we hit the conferences, each one.
For sure. You want to do like win totals and everything?
I just want to do I don't want to do win totals. I want to do questions and answers and like predictions. And
we got to do some win totals, man.
Okay.
All right. I'm glad I talked you into it.
You sold me. All right, Matt Green. Well, we will do 2011 Northern Illinois versus Ball State. No.
Let's do one of these USC teams I've been hating on. Let's USC Notre Dame, that great game.
The push game?
Yeah, the push game, or I don't know, USC. What are some other good games they played in that era?
I'll look it up.
That Reggie Bush game versus Fresno State.
I'll look into it, Matt Green.
All right. Well, you get back to me on that.
I will. All right. For that guy, who we can find on Twitter at @Matt_W_Green. For myself at @Chase_Thomas. More to this episode coming after this break. But, Matt, thank you as always. And I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. right, the Thursday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast rolls along where stats by Will, fellow Knoxvillian, fellow UT superfan. Will, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a nice Thursday that I keep thinking is either Wednesday or Friday, but not Thursday.
Well, I know when it's Thursday because my week opens up a lot more on Thursdays. My Monday through Wednesdays are just blurs. And then Sundays I know because the whole Sunday scary stuff. Like, you know the Sunday vibes. I'm always familiar with Sunday. And then the planning and everything and just like, oh, look, what a week. What a week. And then on Tuesdays I'm always like Liz Lemon and 30 Rock where I'm like, oh, what a week. And then someone is around the corner and like, it's Tuesday. And I'm like, ah, okay.
See, when I used to work in an office prior to COVID, I used to get the Sunday scaries a lot worse. But now it's kind of weird. Like Monday morning, I'll go for a run and I'll come back home and I'm like, well, I got to walk 10 feet to my office now. So it's different. I guess it still hits in a similar way because it's like I still got to do work. But the physical sensation of getting into the car, driving to the job and whatnot, that's all lost now.
Mm. Do you miss it?
Yes and no. I greatly appreciate that I spend every day now at home with my cat, but
what is your cat's name?
I do. Cedric is the official cat of my website.
Like Cedric Diggory or a different Cedric?
Yeah, that's our thought. When we adopted him at Young Williams shelter in Knoxville, which I would like to shout out to Young Williams, a great place. All of the cats and dogs were named after like Harry Potter side characters, like not even really like Hermione or Harry or whatnot. It was like Cedric, there was Hagrid, there was like a bunch of the like kind of B and C tier characters.
Some Bellatrixes that weren't getting adopted because the name was too vicious.
Yeah, Sirius was one of them.
It's so, my favorite.
Yeah, there are a lot of those. So it's a very nerdy place, but one of those that I appreciate. And it's just like Cedric is kind of a nice little name for him, I suppose. I don't remember much about Cedric Diggory, the character, but Cedric, our cat, is moderately handsome. And I know Robert Pattinson played Cedric Diggory in the movie, right?
Oh, so you're not like a big Harry Potter head.
Not a huge one. I love the books, but the movies I get a little lost on. I'm not as big of a movie guy in that front. The third one, though, is fantastic. The third one still holds up because I saw it last year.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen them all so many times, but I've literally, it's funny because I'm rereading the series. I reread Harry Potter and Game of Thrones once a year. Mm. I always like to go back through just in case anyone's like, hey, we need that guy who's just like way too familiar and way just like the unspeakable trivia with Harry Potter and Game of Thrones stuff. I'm there. Like the girlfriend's dog is literally named Khaleesi. My dog that I adopted 2 years ago that unfortunately passed. That's a whole other just traumatic, awful story that I'd rather not dive into because I don't want to malfunction my laptop from the tears flowing out of my face. And but anyway, I named her Cersei because of her thing. So like I have a very strong Harry Potter, Game of Thrones persona about me, I guess is the best way of framing it.
I like it. So you could be a big hit at those themed trivia nights like you mentioned.
Yeah, it's amazing trivia still working, right? Like I would have thought with smartphones that would be something that would have naturally fizzled away, but it hasn't. People I know do it religiously. It's still a thing.
Very cool.
So do you do it? Do you do trivia?
Every now and then. I'm more of like, it's obviously sports is kind of my wheelhouse, but the pop, like the 2000s pop culture, whenever those questions come up, I feel so powerful.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm into it. Do you know what, before we get into the ACC, which we'll be talking about in this college basketball program, Will, did you know that Litton's, Knoxville staple that I've been trying to go to since I moved up here, for school, that like it just looks so great. And it's my kind of place. Like I want to go. and up here in North Knox. I love it. And I could not go last weekend. I had a whole thing with the lady and couldn't go. They closed for July 4th weekend. An amazing thing. Shout out to them. Doing good stuff. But also, very disappointed. Have you had Litton's?
I've had it several times.
Is so it good?
I will say it's solid. Mm. I've not been since COVID hit. It was literally, if I'm recalling correctly, literally the last meal I had out before things began.
Huh.
So it was after Tennessee lost by, you know, 20 something to Auburn at home to close that basketball season.
Man. Okay. Interesting. Well, that's on the list. What is your favorite Knoxville restaurant? What is your favorite? Who would you like to shout out? We did the shelter shout out. What is the restaurant shout out as things open back up?
Always up for a shelter shout out. I love shelters, but I love Sticky Rice Cafe off of the West Hills exit is very good.
Hmm.
Yassin's obviously is a winner. Just, you know, Yassin as a person is a winner, but his food is great too. And Adopo Pizza.
Oh, yes. I've been there.
That's freaking fantastic.
Mm. I love Adopo's. Yeah, Adopo's is cool. Right at the end of the bridge. Yeah, I like Adopo's a lot. Those are all good. Savelli's is still my leader in the clubhouse, I think.
We did that for Valentine's Day one year, and it is a big hit.
Wait, how did you do that? I think we tried to do it for Valentine's Day this year, and it was like, we called like days in advance, and it was booked. Like, I don't know how you do that. How did you finagle that?
6 or 7 years ago, and I think we just maybe got the timing right or something.
Oh, I thought you were about to say you called 6 or 7 years in advance. Like, that would have been amazing. And you're just like, you really were ahead of the game.
See, that would rock if getting Savelli's was getting into, like, Green Bay Packers season tickets or whatever, where you really have to sign up at birth to get in on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, that naturally brings us to some college basketball. Most people like to transition from Savelli's and local Knoxville food options to their college basketball. They like to blend the two. So that's what we want to do on this podcast, this Thursday night off-season edition. Well, the ACC right now. I don't know how you are, but like I go into every ACC season for college basketball and just hope for nothing but the worst from Virginia basketball. Nothing against Tony Bennett. Nothing against that program. DeAndre Hunter, Atlanta Hawks legend DeAndre Hunter, went to UVA, starred at UVA. They are the worst thing to happen to sports television. I can't do it. I hate it so much. They are so difficult to watch that like I very much loathe when they're good. So I actively root against Virginia because of their style, not because of Bennett or anything else. The fans are awesome. Who's great. Awesome stuff. But I actively root against them and I very much enjoy it. And also it's year whatever. And I still go, where's Maryland? There will never be a year where I am used to looking at Maryland's and like in ACC previews and just being like, where's Maryland? What they left Maryland off. Do you do that?
Yeah, I had that literally noted in prep for this show of scanning the ACC teams, making sure I had all my tiers right. And then for a split second, I was like, I think I left Maryland out. And it's, you know, Maryland has been in the Big Ten for what, 7 seasons now or something like that? Like, quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the sensation does not really go away. It's like how I still, from time to time, think Nebraska is a Big 12 team.
That would be nice. I mean, just go back. It's not really working out in the Big Ten. I think they're getting more money, but yeah. No, Nebraska being in the Big Ten, I think, is that the worst of the conference realignment? Like, if you look at everywhere and where everybody ended up, is that the one that sticks out the most to you? Or is it Rutgers? I don't know.
It's still Rutgers, just because that never made me. Like, the Nebraska thing, like, culturally, they are Midwest. Like, Lincoln is a Midwest cultural town in my head.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously is not. Missouri is always going to be a little weird in the SEC to me. Texas, it's one, you know, geographically, it doesn't make sense to say A&M fits that Missouri doesn't, but that's just kind of how it feels. Those would be, like, the two that stand out to me as, like, this just doesn't seem right. Rutgers in Missouri. And an honorable mention to Colorado in the Pac-12.
See, that one doesn't bother me. For whatever reason, that one always sounded right. Like, that one is just like, oh, I could see it. Like, they, when I watch those games, I'm like, yeah, this doesn't stand out to me for whatever reason. I don't know why, but Colorado doesn't. Maybe it's just the vibes, the Denver-Colorado vibes. Feels more Pac-12 West Coastian.
That's fair.
But if we were talking about Maryland, we might be talking about Wiggins not staying in school and disrupting a potential powerhouse starting five for Mr. Turgeon's Maryland Terrapins. That could be the difference between, you know, Maryland really putting together a great Big Ten season and not, because they're going to have to come from within. And I don't know. That would have been nice to see him come back, because he's going to be like a fringe second round, like for late first, early second, maybe even late second. I don't know. Kind of a bummer that he really kept it going for a while and gave him some hope and did not elect to come back to school.
Yeah, on that front, I am greatly excited to see how, as usual, Mark Turgeon produces like objectively fine results while finding new innovative ways to upset Maryland fans, because he could be really, really good at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a strong possibility. But post NBA NBA draft deadline for players, how did that affect the ACC as of right now?
I think, you know, they didn't have like a ton of huge stay or go decisions there. You know, North Carolina might have had one. There are a few spread it throughout the conference, but it doesn't really change the fact that I think the Big Ten is probably ahead of the ACC. Same with the Big 12. It feels like the ACC and SEC are going to be battling each other to be that third best conference. You know, obviously that doesn't necessarily mean a ton in March, as we all know from the routine Big Ten underwhelming performances in March. But I think, you know, at least during the season, you're not going to hear as much about the ACC from like the average media members as you will like the top Big Ten teams or the top Big 12 teams. Because when I look at this conference, there really is only one roster that stands out to me as a true November 9th or whenever the season starts national title contender, and that's Duke. I know it's going to be sickening to hear this because we are already staring down the barrel of a 12-month-long Coach K retirement tour that will be played endlessly on ESPN, the ACC network, and whatnot. But
wait, what makes you say that? What makes you think that is going to be some long, drawn-out goodbye? I don't know what gives you that sense. I will say, did you read the Seth Davis piece on how that all went down and how they landed on Shire and everything that went into it?
Yeah.
Really good. Highly encourage it. You can check it out at The Athletic, College Basketball. But it was a really good piece. And Shire is an easy guy to root for. Like, I'm never going to root for Duke, but John Shire seems like a good dude who paid his dues. And I don't know. He's just someone who's just easy to root for, I think.
Yeah, I'm fine with him taking over. I think it is just going to be kind of alien, you know, 16 months from now when we get to 2022-23, there's opening night, and then you sit and you think, you know, hey, wait a minute, Duke and North Carolina are not coached by Coach K and Roy Williams.
Yeah.
It's just going to be weird. It's hard to think about.
And then 10 years from now, Rick Barnes is still roaming the sidelines in all black for the Vols, and we're just like, what's happening here? Did he just get another 4-year extension?
15 years from now, Boeheim will still be at Syracuse. He will never retire. There's no chance.
I mean, I understand it for a lot of these guys. And the only reason I think Coach K retired and Roy Williams is because of the changing landscape. Not because they don't believe in it, but because they're like, I can't reintegrate myself into this new world. Like, it's just, I'm too old to restart this whole process and get acclimated. And then Jim Boeheim's like, who cares? Like, I'm just losing guys to the G League anyway. Who cares?
Yeah, the Syracuse thing is going to be fascinating yet again, and we'll get to them in a second. But, you know, it seems like they are just destined every year to be either in the first four or like a 10 seed that somehow gets to the Sweet 16 because coaches cannot figure out a 2-3 zone in March. It's so funny to me that they pull this thing off every single year where for 4 months they kind of do their thing. You know, maybe they'll beat North Carolina once, maybe they beat Virginia, but you can also count on them like blowing one to Boston College or something.
Yeah.
And then March, on its Selection Sunday, everybody's waiting on pins and needles to see if Syracuse makes it. As usual, they make it in as an 11 seed. As usual, they beat a 6. And then the 3 seed is like a team that just cannot shoot against the zone. It always happens this way. And it's like, part of me respects it. Part of me feels like that's somehow a less infuriating rooting experience. And like, being a Tennessee fan who's seen them continuously lose short of what of where they should be losing, the whole like rooting for a team that sucks during the regular season but then every single March comes to life, I've struggled with wondering if that's preferable to the regular season fun or is somehow makes it even worse.
I don't know. I really don't know. This is kind of another off tangent thing, but did you see, this just reminded me, Keon, like, he's the most polarizing prospect in the lottery among GMs. Did you see that report? I could have called that 6 months ago. Like, they're gonna see the vertical, they're gonna see some bits and pieces, and they're gonna be like, I have no idea if this is Barnes or this is this who this dude is. Like, what in the world is Keon Johnson? I could have seen this one coming.
Yeah. It's just measurables versus tape.
Yeah.
It just depends which side you fall on, I think.
Yeah, I have no idea, but I am going to root for that man. He's fun. I wish we got 3 years of Keon. Keon's the best.
Yeah.
Tier by tier breakdown. So how would you break up the tiers in the ACC? Is it Georgia Tech's league now and we're all just living in it?
I'm sorry?
Is it Georgia Tech's league and we're all just living in it now? Is this the Josh Pastner world that has come upon us?
That weird Dennis look he had going on last season was so good. And even though we are kind of making our way out of COVID, I wish he would keep the face shield for like the rest of his tenure. It's just perfect for him. But the way I break these teams up, I cheated a little bit with my tier one. As I mentioned, Duke is the only roster right now that I can confidently look at and say, that's probably a national title contender on night one. It's not to say that another team or two from this conference couldn't reasonably get there by the end of the year, but they'd have to have some things go right. So tier 1B, which these are the teams I consider that if they won the regular season or conference tournament in the ACC, I wouldn't be surprised, and you know, it wouldn't really shock anybody. Florida State and North Carolina. North Carolina's in the transition period with Hubert Davis, of course, but they return a lot of talent from last year's team. It's a really stacked roster, actually. And Florida State, I think it's just you kind of have this base level with Leonard Hamilton now for about 6 years, where every single year, kind of regardless of what the names on the roster are, you can confidently say Florida State is going to be like one of the 20 to 25 best teams. They're going to be somewhere between like a 4 and a 6 seed, and it feels like they're going to make the Sweet 16 again. You know, whether they ever end up going further than that, you know, like they did in 2018 is anyone's guess. But the floor to which Leonard Hamilton has pushed Florida State really is remarkable, because that didn't exist for a long time there. And for them to come into a year like this where they don't return a lot from last year's team, it's only 39% of their minutes, but they have some key transfers like Caleb Mills from Houston. You just kind of trust Leonard Hamilton to put it all together like he has many times before.
Yeah, I think Florida State's the safest bet. He has just put together just a great group, and there's just so much momentum at Florida State, and they're just going to be a perennial powerhouse. And also, the best-looking old man I've ever seen in college basketball, right? Like, that dude, is he 73? Do I remember that right? Like, he is way older than he looks.
Potentially the only coach to just have not aged.
Yeah.
Because I remember him being very similar like 15 years ago.
He's 72. He turned 73 on August 4th.
He doesn't look 73, and he hasn't aged in 15 years.
Who did I see who's waiting out the Florida State job? I forgot who it was that I saw is waiting that one out before exploring. I don't remember who it was now. It wasn't Porter Moser. I'm trying to think who I saw. I think Seth Davis was doing these of like where certain guys are going, and he had somebody pegged for the FSU job once it Leonard Hamilton eventually moved on, but I forgot who it was now. Who do you think, who would you bet on being the worst right now? Who do you think is in the worst shape of any ACC team at the moment?
It's a real tie at the bottom in my tier five. Boston College and Pittsburgh BC changed coaches, so they've got a kind of a built-in excuse. But Pittsburgh's continued it's not like they're always as bad as they were under Kevin Stallings those two seasons. But this is going to be year four of Capel at Pittsburgh, and you know, I understand COVID happened. I understand that you know teams had to deal with some unusual situations, but we're entering year four for them, and he still has not topped six conference wins. Which is kind of crazy for a coach that a lot of people figured coming in there was going to be a pretty good hire. And what it really does for me is accentuate just how good Jamie Dixon was there, where, you know, it kind of petered out by those final five seasons after they got the one seed, after they blew it to Butler that one tournament. You know, they didn't really get back to that level again. And, you know, there's natural times for departures to happen, and it is what it is. But I think it says something about it that, you know, since Dixon left, you look at these conference records for Pitt and they're just awful. You know, 4-14, 0-18, 3-15, 6-14, and then the COVID season last year, 6-10. That's bad. I mean, that's a program with, you know, like a solid decade of serious sustained success from 2002 to 2011. And I know we're, you know, getting years and years away from that. But Pitt should be a lot better than this, and they just aren't.
It's just weird. Did you suspect it to be this much of a problem for him when he took the job?
No, because I really did think the Stallings thing was just going to be this one-year epic failure, where it was like he managed to, after, and it's still baffling to me that he was generally pretty good at Vandy and then came to Pittsburgh and completely tanked the program in two seasons. You know, you obviously have to give Capel time to like build out of that, you know, get a new program going, come rise from the ashes and whatnot. But what he's done is just not very impressive. I mean, by now, by year four, the roster should just be better than it is. You know, they only return 40% of minutes from a team that went 6-10. They don't have many impact transfers. I mean, I could be sold that they are the worst roster in the ACC, which is bad for a coach in year four. Like I mentioned, Boston College, I think, is also going to be pretty awful, but they at least have a built-in excuse of they had to go find a new coach.
Yeah, it's not great. Not great, but I also believe in the AD at BC more than I believe in the AD at Pitt. Pitt's in a lot of trouble on multiple fronts, but I think BC's figuring some stuff out with Jeff Hafley and the football program. So I think there's some room for optimism, I think, at BC. Maybe Jared Dudley just needs to get back in there and do some more stuff when he retires. Maybe he can just coach and recruit. Because, I mean, doesn't he have a podcast? Am I misremembering that? I think Jared Dudley has a podcast. Early favorites for you for ACC Player of the Year in 2021-2022?
The obvious pick for me is Paolo Banchero at Duke. He's going to be the runaway best player on the best team in the ACC. It's kind of a fairly obvious choice to me. But the real thing is, like, he's a likely top five draft pick, if not top three. He's going to be the leading scorer, I'm pretty sure. I think he could end up being the leading rebounder, even despite Mark Williams being on that roster. He is just a phenom of a player at 6'9". They're going to lean on him heavily as the season grows old. You know, maybe earlier in the year he won't get as many late game touches because, you know, he's a freshman. It is what it is. And, you know, you do have some experience turning on that team where it's Wendell Moore, Jeremy Roach, Mark Williams. Guys like that might get the touches early, but by the time March rolls around, I really think Banchero could be like an every night 20-8 or 20-9 guy. He is a serious, serious talent. But beyond him, Armand, I'm going to screw this name up, so feel free to edit this and post with your own
I will not, because as somebody who mispronounces names all the time, you have to lean into it.
Armando Bacot? I don't remember. I didn't watch much UNC last year, to be honest, because they weren't fun. But he did take a huge statistical leap forward his sophomore year. way more efficient, third team all ACC, kind of like the main returner on that North Carolina roster that I think is going to be a pretty solid NCAA tournament squad. If he takes another leap, you know, first team all ACC isn't really all that hard to envision. Buddy Boeheim at Syracuse, his 14th season of college basketball, surely to God he can, you know, finally touch that first team all ACC level. The thing with him, though, is, you know, we really did see this in its own form in the NCAA tournament. Buddy is that type of guy that could score, you know, 26, 28, 30 on any given night. But at the same time, if he runs into the wrong opponent, you could get like a 6 spot from him. And he has to just be a more consistent scorer, a more consistent overall player to help Syracuse kind of stop being that 11 seed every year. But if they're a legit NCAA tournament team, like if they're like an 8-9 seed or better, I really do think he could be a player of the year contender. And then Keve Aluma at Virginia Tech, second team all ACC last year. He'll be the best player on an NCAA tournament team as my voice cracks. And then Caleb Mills, I like this, you know, I don't know if this is really an underdog pick necessarily. He should be the best player on yet another good Florida State team. He transferred from Houston midseason last year. Again, a guy that could be the leading scorer, could be the overall best player, really fits a lot of what Leonard Hamilton likes to do, and I'm excited to see him in a Florida State uniform.
Yeah, those are all good choices. I like it. Which returners for you are the most important, and which are the most appetizing newcomers? I think we already have some ideas on the newcomers. I think it might be Duke heavy on that front.
Yes, but I might just try 3 different pronunciations. Bako, Bakut, or Bot for North Carolina. One of those will be right, I hope. Obviously, kind of, he's like the main guy on what I expect to be a very good North Carolina team. Mark Williams at Duke is going to be a huge piece because that is a guy who, you know, things will have to break right in terms of minutes, staying out of foul trouble and whatnot. But you don't really get a ton of, like, truly great in-the-paint seven-footers in college basketball that can sustain themselves for a full season. Like, he could be a double-double average guy, which does excite me a lot. If he's getting enough minutes, like, that's a guy who, you know, at the end of the season you look up and he's posting 12 and 10 at night, which are good college basketball numbers. And then Michael DeVoe at Georgia Tech is a little bit under the radar because, you know, Jose Alvarado got the headlines as they made that run through the ACC tournament, got into the NCAA tournament field, you know, Moses Wright as well. But Michael DeVoe was really good down the stretch of that season. He scored 20 in the ACC tournament title victory over Florida State, was a key part and kept Georgia Tech in the game against Loyola in the NCAA tournament. He's a great shooter, 41% from 3 for his career. Stays on the court often. I think he's going to be a huge piece of a Georgia Tech team that's really going to be wanting to go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments for the first time in a while. On the newcomers front, I think the obvious pick is Banchero at Duke. I mean, at this point in time, I really do think he's the best player in the ACC. You know, Duke's got some other good impact freshmen like AJ Griffin, but Banchero stands kind of head and shoulders above everybody else. Caleb Mills at Florida State, I mentioned, but the third is going to be a familiar name to you and I as Tennessee basketball fans. Noah Locke, who transferred from Florida to Louisville this offseason. It's kind of a unique pick, but it's a Louisville team that doesn't, it hasn't quite come together in the way I thought it was going to midway through Chris Mack's first season there, where they've been fine. They've been, you know, kind of treading water, but, you know, like this year they really should have made the NCAA tournament. And they're kind of coming into this year for Chris Mack where I don't know if it's a must win deal, but it's kind of like a, you know, you've been here for 4 seasons now. You got to prove something beyond one first round exit in the NCAA tournament. Locke is going to have to be a big part of that because he is, by all accounts, the best shooter on that roster, 40% from 3 in his career at Florida. He never really kind of came into his own at Florida because he was more of a role player than a true you know, take over the game guy. But anybody who shoots as well as he does is going to be critical to a team like Louisville that I think is a likely NCAA tournament team, but where they end up in the seeding, I really couldn't tell you. You know, it seems like for them to be anything better than like a 7 or 8 seed, they need a great season start to finish from Locke. And I really want to see if he's able to provide that as a guy who's still, you know, sort of like a, not like a star, but a really key critical role player who can come in and provide good defensive minutes as well.
There you go. I like it. I like it. Last thing, as we wrap up the ACC, how many NCAA tournament teams can we expect the ACC to produce next year?
This is a fun one because, you know, the ACC has only put in, and I say only because they have 15 teams, only put in 7 teams the last two NCAA tournaments. They put in 9 in 2017 and 2018. And, you know, there's kind of that period of time where people thought, oh, this is going to be the conference that puts like 10 or even 11 in one day. And it hasn't happened. It just hasn't come to fruition because that lower third and even middle pack of the conference is just not held up their end of the deal. I would lean towards 8 right now. I think Duke is an obvious pick, as are Florida State and UNC. There are 4 teams that I think are relatively likely teams that, you know, if an injury happens or things just don't gel together as they hope, you know, this could go a different way for them. Virginia Tech, Louisville, Notre Dame, and Virginia. So that gets you to 7. The 8th team is very interesting because I think there are 4 in my tier 3 that could be NCAA tournament teams, but statistically I would only lean towards one of them getting in. Any of Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Clemson, or NC State could get in. And among those 4 teams, there are some fascinating narratives there. Particularly the NC State thing really interests me because I think everyone thought Kevin Keats was going to turn that program around in a better fashion than what has happened so far. Clemson, Brad Brownell seems like he's on the hot seat every single season. Georgia Tech, the Pastner thing, can you keep it going?
I hope so, man. I've had him on this podcast. I talk with Pastner. He's a cool dude. He's easy to root for. I love Josh Pastner.
He seems like such a nice guy.
I can confirm as a coach that I know, he is a nice guy.
Yeah, so I like him, and I'm rooting for them to sustain that success a little bit because, I mean, one of the first, you know, this is more of a side note, but one of the first teams I really remember loving as a college basketball fan was the Georgia Tech national title game.
Can I tell you a story about that?
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Okay, so that March Madness, or that Final Four was happening on my 13th birthday weekend. I'm going to date myself here. And I went to New York for my birthday, my family. And I remember going into, like, all my memories, I don't know if you're like this, Will, but because I'm a weirdo. Everything I relate to sports. Like, my grandmother, who I love very much, associates everything in life with what people were wearing. She can remember what she was wearing in 1983. Like, that's how she'll remember an event based on what she's wearing and stuff like that. For me, I associate things in my life with what sports were going on at that time. So I remember distinctly, like, being at a bar with my family in when I was 13 on my 13th birthday party, and like leaving and the table and just going up and watching UConn versus Tech. And I was like, I'm gonna go watch Marvin Lewis and Luke Schneider. What was it? Schneider? What was his last name? The big dude, number 12. Schneschinger? What was his name?
Luke Schencher, something.
Is that what it was? Yeah,
that.
It was something close to that, I remember. And then you have Marvin Lewis, Jarrett Jack, BJ Elder, I want to say was in that group. Will Bynum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people. You want to call yourself sports renaissance men and women? No. I've locked that up. Who can pull that out without looking? That's what I'm bringing you. Ben Gordon, Emeka Okafor, who could forget that matchup? Not this guy. Not this guy. I want to say Charlie Villanueva was also on that team. Could be wrong on that one. Don't hold me to it. But yeah, I remember like literally watching that whole game and just being really bummed that Tech did not win, as my grandfather went to Tech and a lot of my family on that side is a Tech fan. So I was rooting for him, and it's sad. And as someone who's been to a hefty amount of Georgia Tech baseball games in my life, it was sad that UConn won that game. But I remember it very distinctly.
See, I loved that team because they just kept they played in, like, I just went on KenPom to remember, make sure I was remembering correctly. Every single tournament game they played in was like a nail biter, start to finish. Like, they never pull away from a team. I'm looking at it now. Of the five games they had, every single one was within two possessions at the end of regulation. Like, the Kansas game went to overtime, of course, but they just kept finding ways to win these games where you thought they never could. And I was in love with it. And obviously I was rooting for them against UConn. I never liked Jim Calhoun when I was little. So, it was just like, they were the team of underdogs to me. So I loved them. But that's so funny that you could remember, like, being at that bar and watching it. I wish I could remember, things like that from, you know, 2004.
No. Don't wish that upon yourself. Don't of useless sports dribble that is just filled my head. Like, I have no room. I tell people all the time, I'm like, don't have any room. They're like, you have selective hearing. No. I just can tell you about Jay Cutler's 2013 season in Chicago. That's what I'm telling you, is I don't have the room. I don't have the room to tell you about Mike Martz's offense. I don't have the room to remember the other things, the normal things that people remember. I remember where I was when I found out about what was his name? Robinson, number 41, like that whole story, why he wasn't playing in the Super Bowl that week. Like, I remember going through the manual and being like, where is he? And people deferring why Mr. Robinson was not playing in the Broncos Super Bowl. Do you remember that story?
I was a little young for it, but I read about it, you know, way after the fact.
Eugene Robinson, that was it. I always want to say Eli, but it's Eugene Robinson. It was just because Eugene's a weird football guy name. But Eugene Robinson, yeah, that was like a whole thing. Because I remember in the manual being like, where is Eugene? Why is he not on the field? Where is Eugene Robinson?
The idea of you, so you would have been like 8, right?
Yes.
7 or 8? 7,
I believe.
So the idea of going around and asking every adult where the player was. He got caught for. Oh man, I wish I could have just, I would have loved to have, like, heard the gears turning in their head of, like, how to possibly explain that away.
Exactly. It was amazing. But that's what I associate that Super Bowl. And I remember also where I was when Vic split two Vikings defenders when he ran and scored in overtime and ended the Vikings game on a walk-off. Like, I remember being at a nasty sports bar after church on a Sunday. Remember watching it and being like, oh my goodness, what just happened? Yeah, remember that too. It's just weird. My entire life is just built around sports memories, I guess. My poor girlfriend. But yeah. All right, well, that is all I've got, Will. Where are we gonna go next week? Big 12, Pac 12? Where would you like to hit up? Big East?
I want to get the Big Ten out of the way. My dad is a Michigan graduate, and I don't know if I can wait until March to feel his disappointment again. So I'm just going to generate it for July.
There you go. Okay. I like it. Penn State got a new coach in there. People are optimistic there, but I'm like, have y'all watched Penn State basketball? Doesn't seem like that's a winnable situation. There's some college basketball. So I'm just like, in college football, we see this a lot more where they're like, oh, I like that sexy name. He was good at insert group of five job here. And I'm like, great. That no one's going to win there. Like, it's almost impossible to win there. Bad luck on his part. Will, what can we check out from you across the internet this week? How do people keep up to date on Young KenPom?
I'm so honored by that. You can go to statsbywill.com. That's where I post all of my stuff. I've got some NCAA-wide analysis on what determines who wins close games, like games decided by 6 or less. I've got some stuff coming out on that in the coming weeks, as well as some research on what the best teams in college basketball are doing differently than everyone else, if they are doing anything differently. So I've got that coming out. I know as we get closer to the season, I'll be sharing some more conference-level thoughts on the site like we do in this podcast. But, yeah, statsbywill.com is the best place to go. Or you can go to that same handle on Twitter. It's the guy with a cover photo of the cat named Cedric. So pretty easy to find, I would say.
There you go. Go check out his work. It's great. And we'll be here every Thursday evening on this podcast. You'll hear it on Fridays. But Will, thank you as always, my friend, and we will talk next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.